This is The Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller. Written by J.D. Kirk and produced by B. Heal. Episode 5.
The Caledonian Canal was a world-renowned tourist attraction, apparently. Logan couldn't really figure out why. It was, as far as he could tell, just a canal like any other. Water, locked gates, boats, the usual. Nothing startling about any of it. Sure, if you're into that sort of thing, it was probably nice enough, but it didn't do a lot for him. Maybe it was because it was getting dark. Or, more likely, because he had more pressing issues to think about. He sat behind the wheel of the Focus, peering ahead through the gloom at a long wooden houseboat moored a few hundred yards along the canal path, just off a little wooden jetty. It sat low in the water, rocking gently as the wind shoved it around. The curtains were drawn over the boat's windows. Behind them was mostly darkness, but occasionally an oblong of light would sweep across the curtains from the inside, as if someone was moving a torch around.
How long until armed response gets here?
He clicked the windscreen wipers on for a moment, clearing the rain away.
45 minutes, maybe.
Logan drummed his fingers on the steering wheel.
We can't wait that long.
Aye, we can.
No saying what's going on in there.
His gaze boring into the side of the boat as if some previously latent X-ray vision might suddenly kick in.
Well, no. But you couldn't have got me the bloody chips first. Fine. What's the plan?
It's no really a plan as such. Plan would be stretching it. Is everyone in position? Path blocked further up.
Tyler's got a couple of cars and a van up around the corner.
Ben replied, motioning ahead to where the towpath curved around to the right. The area on the right of the path was fenced off and thick with trees that nicely hid the vehicles stopped round the bend.
Caitlin has a crew covering the exits behind.
Good.
The door clunked as he pulled the handle and shouldered it open.
Right then, you stay here, eyes peeled.
As Logan exited the car, Ben clambered clumsily across into the driver's seat.
For Christ's sake, be careful.
Logan gave him a curt nod, then gently pushed the door just far enough for the mechanism to click into place. He didn't want to risk fully closing it, in case the sound of it alerted Walker. Pulling his collar up against the rain, then thrusting his hands deep into his pockets, Logan set off walking up the path. He kept to the right, away from the boat, eyes fixed on the path ahead like he had a very specific destination planned, and it wasn't anywhere around here. His boots made a series of soft crunching sounds on the limestone surface of the path, but he reckoned the sound of the wind and rain against the boat's windows should mask that with a bit of luck. The torchlight lit the inside of the curtains. Logan picked up the pace. He was 20 feet away when the door at the back of the houseboat opened, and a wild-haired man in a leather jacket launched himself onto the path.
Shite! Walker, stay where you are!
Walker clearly wasn't great at following instructions. He set off at a clip, racing away from the DCI, headed in the direction of the bend. He glanced back, and the sight of Logan kicked his legs into higher gear.
Get him! I'll check the boat!
Ben's voice came in snatches from behind Logan, sliced and diced by the storm. Logan didn't need telling twice. He knew the coat would only slow him down, so he shrugged it off. Then, head down, arms pumping, he set off after the bastard. His old PE teacher had always told him that, "You might be a big lad, but you can fair move." Logan demonstrated that again now, his size 12 slamming against the limestone path, propelling him on through the rain like pistons. Walker was almost at the bend, and was about to run straight into Tyler's team, but Logan very much wanted to be there to see him getting collared. With a final glance back at the pursuing detective, Walker lumbered around the curve and out of sight. Being unable to see him spurred Logan on. Digging deep, he found some extra reserves of speed, a and was soon clattering around the corner himself, chest heaving beneath his now almost transparent shirt. The curve went on for a couple of dozen yards. Logan was halfway around it when the worry kicked in. There was no shouting, no raised voices, no barked commands. He stumbled onto the street, then hissed when a set of car headlights illuminated, blinding him.
"Stay where you are!"
barked a voice from beyond the lights. Tyler.
"That's me, you daft bastard! Where is he?"
"We haven't seen him, boss. We thought you were..."
"Bastard! He's going into the trees!"
Logan vaulted over the wire fence that ran alongside the path, misjudged the landing, and went staggering down the grassy incline on the other side, branches whipping at him.
"Well, don't just fucking stand there!"
he bellowed back over his shoulder as he plunged on into the woods, gravity and momentum pulling him down the steepening hill. A van door slid open. Two car doors slammed. Logan heard the fence shake and feet come thudding onto the wet grass as he pushed through the trees.
"On the right!"
called someone from behind. Logan's eyes shot in that direction and caught a glimpse of a burly figure heading away from him. The route in front of Logan was uneven and choked with scrub and branches, but it was a dream compared to what Walker had to go through. The bearded bastard alternated between cursing and sobbing as he struggled through a tangle of jaggy bushes, the thorns ripping at his legs through his faded jeans. There was a path or road ahead through the trees, maybe 50 feet away. Walker was desperately making his way towards it, but Logan was going to make bloody sure he never got there. Thundering down the hill, the detective skirted the jaggies, used the trunk of a tree as an anchor point, and swung himself sideways into Walker, hammering him with a shoulder barge that sent him crashing into the undergrowth.
"Right then!"
Logan wheezed, making a grab for Walker's arm. Walker twisted, swung. Logan caught a fleeting glimpse of something metallic, and then pain exploded across the side of his skull and his legs turned to jelly. He sensed Walker's movement more than saw it, and grabbed for him. His fingers found the leather jacket, but Walker shrugged him off. The forest spun. The rain, which had been falling from above, now came at Logan from all directions at once, a cyclone of icy droplets that twirled him around and sent waves of nausea flooding through him.
"You all right, boss?"
"Get after him!"
Logan hissed. He shook his head, and Tyler's face blurred into focus. Tyler set off again. Logan started to run, but his legs objected, and his head voiced its own concerns with a series of stabbing pains that almost dropped him to his knees. An uneven line of uniforms and high-vis vests came scrambling past him. Blinking against the rain, Logan was just able to make it Walker stumbling the final few feet towards the edge of the tree line. He was going to make it. The bastard was going to make it! A blue light illuminated directly ahead of Walker as he launched himself onto the road. Logan heard a shout, a grunt, a clatter.
"Get off me! Get the fuck off me!"
"Edward Walker, I'm arresting you on the suspicion of the abduction of Connor Reed."
That was D.S. Macquarie's voice. Logan let out a little groan of satisfaction and slumped against the trunk of the nearest tree, his semi-transparent shirt pinkening down the front with his blood.
"You are not obliged to say anything, but anything you do say will be noted and may be used in evidence."
Logan raised his eyes to the sky, letting the rain wash over him.
"Go the bastard!"
he said, and then he pushed himself away from the tree, dabbed at his wound with his sleeve, and set off down the hill. By the time Logan reached the bottom, Walker was already cuffed and in the process of being bundled into the back of one of the cars with the lights flashing. He had been putting up a bit of a struggle, but the sight of the blood-soaked Logan striding closer made him practically throw himself into the back seat.
"I didn't do nothing, all right? I didn't do it."
D.S. Macquarie, who had been standing back while a couple of uniforms manhandled Walker into the car, pulled her phone from her pocket and glanced at the screen.
"Boss,"
she said, showing Logan the message she had received. Boat empty. No sign of boy. Logan's face darkened. He tore his eyes from the screen and marched to the car.
"Where is he? Where's Connor?"
"I told you, I don't know,"
Walker protested. He was vibrating, tears streaming down his cheeks.
I knew this would happen. I fucking knew it. I didn't have nothing to do with it, all right? I ain't seen him.
Logan's fists clenched, his teeth ground together. He slammed the door before he could do anything stupid.
Get him to the station. Log him in. Then get him to an interview room.
He instructed anyone and everyone within earshot.
Do not let him talk to anyone. Do not let him eat or drink. Don't even let him go for a slash. Get him booked in, get him sat down, get him warned that he better start talking.
Logan raised his voice to ensure Walker heard the next part.
Or I might not be responsible for my actions.
You need your head looked at.
Logan turned on him, eyebrows furrowed.
Sorry?
I mean, no. I'm not saying you're mental or anything, sir. I mean...
Tyler pointed to the side of Logan's head, just above the temple.
That might need stitching.
Logan dabbed at the wound with the back of a hand. It came away bloody. Very bloody, in fact.
Bollocks! Fine! DS Macquarie, can you...
Hop in, boss.
Caitlin said, indicating her car.
We'll swing by the hospital.
Right, thanks.
He eyeballed Tyler while stabbing a finger in Walker's direction.
Not a bite to eat, not a drop to drink, not a moment to piss, all right?
Got it.
But try to get him talking before you get him in. If he knows where Connor is, we need to find out pronto.
Will do, boss.
Bending, Logan brought his face close to the back window of the police car. Walker slid a little further along the seat away from him as Logan glowered at him through the tinted glass.
I'll see you soon, Eddie.
Half an hour later, Logan sat in the front seat of Caitlin's car, gingerly brushing his fingers across three neat sutures on the line of his head where skin met scalp. The car's wipers were thunking away, working overtime to push back against the rain.
I'll tell you, for a wee hospital, they're good. What was that? In and out in about 20 minutes? You wouldn't get that down the road.
Aye, pretty good. I mean, you did go in flashing your ID and declaring it a police emergency, but still...
Never hurts to light a fire under them.
He gazed out through the windscreen at the police station looming ahead of them.
Does it ever stop raining around here?
Occasionally, aye. Nice when it does.
Shite when it doesn't, though, I'd imagine.
Oh God, aye.
She pulled into a parking space at the side of the station, then flipped the little lever that activated the automatic handbrake. The fact you had to flip a lever seemed to negate the automatic bit, she'd always thought, but it was still better than wrestling with the pull-up handle she'd had in her previous cars.
Right then. Let's go see what Mr. Walker has to say for himself.
He caught the door handle, but didn't pull it yet.
I want you sitting in on the interview.
Me? What about D.I. Ford?
He's tired. He needs a break. Besides, Ben will let me get away with murder. I want you keeping things by the book, all right?
Sure. Aye. No bother.
Right, good,
Logan said. He pulled the handle and opened the door.
Let's go find that boy.
You might want to get changed first, sir.
Logan looked down at his shirt. It was in a hell of a state, quite frankly. Soaked through, smeared with dirt and stained in one side with blood. Between that and the stitches, he reckoned he must have made for a truly horrifying sight.
Nah,
he said, stepping out into the downpour.
Adds to the effect.
Logan and Caitlin sat across the table from Ed Walker in one of the station's two interview rooms, audio and video recorders listening in and watching on. Someone suitably junior from one of the local legal firms had been dragged out of his warm house and was scanning through a bundle of documents D.I. Ford had presented him with when he'd arrived. Lawrence, someone had said his name was, although Logan didn't know if this was his first name or his last name, nor did he care.
Sorry, won't be.
Lawrence licked a finger and flipped in a page. His lips moved silently as he quickly read. Logan's chair creaked as he leaned back and sighed, very deliberately.
Sorry?
Walker's head was down, his eyes fixed on the table in front of him. Like Logan, he was still wet. although nowhere near to the extent the detective was, his leather jacket having protected him from the worst that the weather had thrown at him.
Right. And done. Sorry,
said Lawrence, dragging his eyes up from the page and setting the document back on the table.
Now, what did you...
Where is he? What did you do with the boy?
I told you I ain't seen him,
Walker said, raising his gaze to meet the DCI's.
Then why hide, eh? Why run? Why clout me with a bloody torch?
Logan asked, indicating the sutures on his head.
If you had nothing to do with Connor's abduction, why do all that?
Because I've been inside, ain't I? I know what you lot are like. Ex-con living next door, kid goes missing. I know what you'll be thinking.
Logan leaned forward, interlocking his fingers on the desk before him.
Trust me, Eddie. You have no idea what I'm thinking. If you did, if you even had the faintest notion of what's going on in my head right now, you'd be much more forthcoming with information, I can assure you.
Lauren shot a look across the table at D.S. Macquarie, but she ignored it.
Where is he?
I told you, I don't know. I only heard about him going missing on Friday night. I haven't seen him since, I don't know, Wednesday, maybe.
Where did you see him on Wednesday?
Coming home from school.
Did you follow him?
Out the window.
Right. Out the window, got you. So not through the holes you made in his bedroom ceiling then?
What holes? What are you on about?
We'll come back to that. We're circling round the big issue here a bit, don't you think?
He slowed his voice down, speaking every word very deliberately in turn.
Where is Connor?
Walker ran his tongue across the front of his bottom teeth. He ran his fingers through his beard, which was even worse in real life than it had been in the photograph.
Neverland.
What?
Through the looking glass. Outer space.
Walker leaned in closer, his voice rising.
I keep telling you, I don't fucking know where he is. I'd never hurt any kid. Never mind him. If I did know where he was, I'd say, but I don't, all right? I don't.
Logan's eyes became narrow slits. He squeezed his hands together. As long as they were together, they weren't around Walker's throat. He was annoyed at himself for bringing D.S. Macquarie in, and yet, at the same time, relieved she was there.
What do you mean, never mind him? What's so special about him?
What? Nothing.
He settled back in his chair, his eyes darting away from Logan.
Aye, there is. You singled him out. You wouldn't hurt any kid. Never mind him. Why wouldn't you hurt him in particular?
Because he's my neighbour's kid, ain't he?
Neighbours? It's no Ramsey Street. You're squatting, Eddie. Illegally. Which, in case your crack legal team here hasn't already informed you, is a clear violation of your parole.
Lawrence half smiled and frowned at the same time, like he'd just heard a joke he didn't quite get, but which he suspected he was the punchline of.
Isn't that right, D.S. Macquarie?
Blatant breach, sir.
Shocking violation. Although, would you say it's currently Mr. Walker's biggest problem?
Far from it. I'd say it's the least of his worries, sir.
Hear that? The least of your worries.
Logan jabbed a thumb in Caitlin's direction.
And she knows her stuff, believe me.
He started to count in his fingers.
Let's look at those worries, shall we? Breaking and entering. Squatting. Criminal damage. Possession of a Class B drug. Resisting arrest. Clouting a police officer with a dirty great torch. And, oh aye, lest we forget, kidnapping.
He shot Caitlin a sideways look.
Anything I missed?
Did you count B and E twice, sir? The boat.
The boat? God aye, I forgot the boat.
He beamed a broad grin across the table at Walker.
Told you she's good. That's potentially a long stretch. A long stretch. I mean, I've been doing this a while. I could probably get you 6 months just for the state of this shirt alone. Never mind what you'd get sent down for the rest of it.
Sucking in his bottom lip, he shook his head.
No, it is not looking good, Eddie. It's not looking good at all.
Logan stopped there for a while, letting the silence worm its way into Walker's head and do his talking for him. It was important to give it all a bit of time to sink in, bed down. If you knew what you were looking for during an interview, you could actually see the moment the full gravity of the situation hit them, and watch as the idea of a lengthy sentence and all its horrible repercussions took root in their heads. Walker was no different. His breathing became short, his eyes shimmered, and somewhere in that badger's arse of a beard, his bottom lip gave a wobble. Bingo.
Of course. We could make a lot of that stuff go away. Breaking in. The drugs. I'm even prepared to overlook this, Eddie. And I do not say that lightly. Do I, Detective Sergeant McQuarrie?
No, boss. You do not say that lightly.
I do not say that lightly. We can do it too, me and her. We can make all that other stuff go away. We're nice like that. But you have to tell us where Connor is, Eddie.
I don't know.
Come on, Eddie. This is your future we're talking about.
I don't know.
I'm running out of patience fast here, so I'm going to ask you one more time.
Logan said. He leaned forward, his face twisting into an involuntary snarl.
Where's Connor? What have you done with him?
Nothing. I don't fucking know where he is. I keep telling you.
Walker blurted, tears rolling down his cheeks.
If I knew, I'd tell you, but I don't. I swear, I don't.
I think you're lying to me, Eddie.
Walker's face was a scrunched up mess of tears and snot now. His shoulders shook as he sobbed silently, eyes closed.
Maybe we could take a break.
He'll get a break when he tells us where the boy is.
He says he doesn't know,
the solicitor said, his tone bordering on apologetic.
I know what he said. I don't believe him. What about the teddy? The envelope? How did you know about that?
Walker sniffed and wiped his eyes on his sleeve.
What teddy? What are you on about?
Don't give me your shite!
His fist thumped the table. Lawrence jumped in his chair.
The teddy you left on the doorstep, with the photo. How did you know about the writing?
What teddy? What photo?
Walker asked. He looked to his brief for support.
I don't know what he's talking about.
There was a knock at the door. Logan tutted.
What?
The door opened a crack, revealing a narrow strip of DC Khaled.
Boss, you got a minute?
Kinda busy right now.
It's important. You're gonna want to see.
Logan eyeballed Walker.
I'll be right back. You use this time wisely, Eddie. Think about your options. It shouldn't take you long.
He stood up so he towered above the other man.
You've no got all that many left. This had better be bloody important.
It's major, sir.
Hamza told him, leading the DCI back into the incident room. Tyler Nish stood a good 8 or 9 feet from DS Khaled's desk, where the laptop was sitting open. Hamza gestured to it wordlessly, then hung back with Tyler while Logan approached.
What am I meant to be looking?
Logan began. Then his voice trailed off as he got closer and saw what was currently displayed on the screen.
Hang on. Is that...
Aye, looks like it, sir. Didn't notice at first, but I spotted it when going back through.
A jumble of thoughts spun around inside Logan's head, none of them quite falling into place. The photo was a game changer, no question about it. He just had no idea what the game was going to change into. That was the problem.
Can you run me off a couple of copies of this?
He asked, pointing to the screen. Hamza nodded.
It'll take about 15 minutes. I'll hate to get a USB stick to...
Do whatever you need to do.
Logan turned his attention to Tyler. He noticed that the younger officer had got himself tidied up after the chase through the trees. He looked immaculate, with only a few hairs out of place, and even those had been styled that way deliberately.
Is the liaison still with the Reeds?
Not sure, sir.
Check and find out. Then send someone to get Katrina Reed. In fact, you go. Tell her we need to ask her a few questions. Nothing major. Tell her just some background stuff. Keep the husband at home in case anyone tries to get in contact.
Got it.
Logan looked around the instant room.
D.I. Ford around.
He's getting his head down for an hour, sir. Thought it was a good time. Plans doing the night shift if we need to.
Right, fine.
What do you want me to do with Katrina Reed when I bring her in?
There's another interview room, right? Stick her in that. Then come get me.
It's occupied, sir.
What? By who?
Your journalist.
Henderson.
Tyler shook his head.
Nah, the other one. The local guy. Fisher, is it?
Thomas Fisher.
All right, you fucking swat. We didn't have to go far to find him. He was out front with the rest of them.
Right, aye. I'd forgotten about him. Anyone spoken to him yet?
Not really, boss, no. He's sitting in there looking fit for tears, though.
Fine. Tyler, go get Katrina Reed. Hamza, I don't hear that printer going.
Hamza practically snapped to attention. Tyler took out his car keys and spun them on a finger like a Wild West sheriff with a six-shooter. Logan turned to the door.
Right, Mr. Fisher. Let's get you out of the road.
Tom Fisher gave a throaty little sob at the sight of Logan when the DCI threw the interview room door wide open. He stood there in the doorway, one hand on the handle, a shoulder resting against the frame. The young journalist's eyes widened in horror as he took in the blood on Logan's shirt and the cakes of dried crimson on the side of his neck.
I didn't do anything.
Logan smiled, good-naturedly.
Relax, Mr. Fisher. You're not under arrest. I just need you to help clarify something for us.
He entered the room, but didn't close the door all the way. Tyler had said that Fisher had been close to tears, but by the looks of him now, he'd fully succumbed to those at some point, and was now all red ringed eyes and dried snot.
Don't worry, Mr. Fisher. We're going to have you out of here in just a couple of minutes. I just have a question about Ken Henderson.
Fisher frowned. He was younger than most journalists Logan had dealt with, although a lot of the local reporters tended to be that bit less experienced. Not all, of course. Logan had come across some right terriers in the local press over the years. But for some, it was the first ring in a career ladder that would ultimately take them all the way to the bottom.
Who's Ken Henderson?
Another journalist. Freelance. Grey hair. Smarmy bastard.
Oh yes, him. From Glasgow?
Fisher asked. He nodded, even before Logan had volunteered an answer.
Yes, I was talking to him this morning. He seemed nice enough.
Oh aye, he does seem nice. He seems lovely, in fact, when he wants to. He isn't, though. You'll want to watch yourself there.
Fisher said nothing. He'd had acne in his younger years, and the scars of it dotted his cheeks. Logan vaguely recalled seeing him in the scrum outside the Reed's house earlier in the day. He couldn't place exactly where he'd been, but he seemed familiar enough.
Henderson said you told him about a teddy bear that was delivered to the home of Connor Reed. Is that true?
Fisher was quick to nod.
Yes.
Logan closed the door. Fisher's eyes darted from the DCI to the door and back again. He shifted anxiously in his seat.
And how did you come to know about this teddy bear?
The spar, you know, down the road from the house, not the one up the hill.
Logan had no idea where either of the shops were, but didn't say as much.
Go on.
Someone in there was talking about it. Well, I mean, everyone was, really. Two women were chatting about it, and an old fella, they said something about it having a ransom note.
Fisher sucked in a steadying breath, then swallowed.
Is that...
Is that true?
I think we'll stick to me interviewing you, son, if you don't mind.
Fisher blushed and immediately looked away.
I wasn't.
He began to protest, but then clearly thought better of it.
Sorry.
We're all just doing our jobs. I get it. So it was general chatter, was it? About the bear, I mean. You didn't see anything yourself.
No. I mean, yes. I mean, people talking. That was all. I passed it on. Ken, was it? He said we should keep each other in the loop with stuff, so I told him about it.
Aye, that sounds like him. I'm guessing he hasn't been quick to keep you in the loop at his side.
Fisher blushed again and shook his head.
No, thought not.
There was...
The young journo's voice fell away.
What?
Nothing. I mean... No. I mean... It was just that he didn't seem surprised or anything. About the teddy and the ransom note, or whatever it was. He didn't seem surprised.
You think he already knew?
I'm not saying that. No, I'm not. He probably was surprised. He just didn't show it.
Aye, probably.
He opened the door.
Right, thanks for your time.
Fisher's face almost collapsed in on itself with relief.
That's it. I can go.
You can go.
The legs of the young journalist's chair scraped on the floor as he rushed to his feet. He was at the door when Logan stopped him.
One thing, just quickly. Could you tell me where you were on Friday around 1:30 in the afternoon?
The boy looked flustered. For a moment, Logan thought he might burst into tears again right there in the doorway.
It's just for our records, that's all. Nothing to worry about.
Fisher's brow furrowed. His eyes flitted left to right, desperately searching.
I don't... Friday? I'm not...
Something slotted into place. And he let out something that was part sob, part cheer.
Friday lunchtime? Yes, I was doing an interview.
Sounding like he'd never been more happy about anything in his life.
Mary Grigger. Her cats keep going missing.
It was Logan's turn to frown.
What?
Her cats. They keep going missing. She's the four disappear in the last 3 months.
Fisher squirmed a hand down into the picture of his two tight jeans.
Hang on. I've got a picture.
Producing his phone, he tapped the screen a couple of times, then swiped with his thumb.
No. Not that. There.
He turned the phone so Logan could see the photograph displayed on screen. A woman in her 80s, or thereabouts, sat in a worn old armchair, keeping a firm grip on an unhappy-looking cat.
She had five. Well, no, she had three. And then she lost two, so she got another
one. That's fine. I don't need her life story,
Logan said, gesturing for him to put the phone away.
And there's been no sign of them. The cats.
Fisher shook his head and slipped his phone back into his pocket.
Has she reported it?
I think so, yes. She said she had, but she's a bit... dawdled.
Aye, I can imagine. Someone at the paper can verify you were at her house around lunchtime.
No, probably not. They know I covered the story, but... Wait. No, they can. I sent the photos across right after, probably about 10 to 2. I'm sure if you check with Mary, she'll be able to tell you I was there, too.
Logan flashed him the thinnest of smiles.
That won't be necessary, Mr. Fisher. Like I say, just for our records. Thank you again for your time. And sorry for the inconvenience.
He held the door open. A motion for the journalist to go through.
I'll have someone see it out.
Deus Khaled was lurking out in the corridor when Logan and Fisher emerged from the room. He immediately offered the DCI an unmarked cardboard folder.
Those printouts you wanted, sir.
Grand swap,
said Logan, taking the folder.
Can you see Mr. Fisher out? Get someone to give him a run home.
It's okay. I've got my bike. I only live round the corner.
Logan looked past him to the window. The rain was no longer sideways, but was still coming down.
You sure? You'll get soaked.
For the first time since arriving, Fisher smiled.
It's the Highlands. We're used to it.
Aye. Fair enough. Thanks again for your time.
He gestured for Hamza to lead the journalist out to reception, then turned and flipped open the folder. Two faces gazed up at him, both smiling.
Right then,
he muttered, when the door through to the reception clunked closed behind him.
Let's see what all this is about.
How long had it been quiet, out there beyond the door? An hour? A day? He couldn't tell. All he knew was it was dark, and he was cold, and he was scared, and that he wanted, more than anything, to go home. His wrists hurt where they were tied. His legs were numb. His throat was raw from keeping his sobs inside. He risked letting one out now. It was muffled by the gag across his mouth, but the sound was enough to startle him, to send electric shocks of panic coursing through his veins. What if they heard? What if they got angry? What if they hurt him? Tears came at the thought of them hurting him. He didn't want them to hurt him. Not again. He'd seen what they had done to the cat. What was left of it. It had looked like roadkill when the boy had brought it to him on the tray. All bright red flesh and exposed white bone. The smell had been horrible. It had forced its way up his nostrils, turning his stomach and making him feel sick. He had almost been sick when the cat had moved. Its head had twitched. A wet, mournful sort of sound had emerged from its mouth, and the boy had erupted into delighted laughter before skipping off with the tray held high like some sort of trophy. The man had appeared a moment later. The man had stared in around the edge of the door as he inched it shut, sealing him back inside the cupboard. That had been a while ago. He hoped for the cat's sake that it was dead by now. Alone in the darkness, he prayed that he wouldn't be next.
Have any changes of heart while I was away, Eddie?
Logan asked, settling back into his seat.
You ready to tell us where Connor is yet?
I already told you. I don't
know why. You did mention that.
For the benefit of the recording, DCI Logan has now re-entered the room.
Sorry, I always forget that bit.
He placed the folder on the desk in front of him, one hand on top of it to keep it closed.
How do you know the reads, Eddie?
Walker's eyes went to the folder, then back to the DCI.
How do you think? I live next door to them.
And that's it, is it? That's the extent of it.
What do you mean?
It's not a hard question, Eddie. I think it's pretty clear. Before you illegally moved in next door to them, had you ever met either Mr. or Mrs. Reed?
The eyes flicked to the folder again. This time they lingered for a moment before Walker dragged them back up.
No.
No? You've never met them?
The solicitor, Lawrence, cleared his throat.
Detective Chief Inspector, I
think... Shh! Logan told him. He tapped a finger on top of the folder, beating out a slow, steady rhythm.
I'm going to ask you again, Eddie, and I want you to really think about the answer this time, all right? Really try for me, okay?
He leaned forward in his chair.
Did you know either Mr. or Mrs. Reed prior to the day you moved into the house next door to theirs?
Walker opened his mouth to respond. Logan raised a hand to stop him.
Think before you answer, Eddie. Take your time to consider your response before you say anything.
Logan tapped his finger against the folder again. Slow. Steady. Tick. Tick. Tick.
No,
said Walker, although he sounded even less convincing now than he had been,
I didn't know either of them.
Uh-huh.
Logan mused. Then, without a word, he opened the folder and slid one of the photographs across the table so it was directly in front of Walker. He handed the other copy to Caitlin, who looked significantly more surprised by it than Walker did.
That's you in that picture, Eddie, right?
Walker's gaze was fixed in the image. He nodded once, but said nothing.
And could you tell us, for the benefit of the tape, who's that you're pictured with?
Walker's eyes met Logan's across the table, wide and defiant.
Fuck you.
Language, Eddie.
Logan scolded. He shrugged.
Fair enough. I'll say it.
Reaching across the table, Logan tapped the smiling face of the woman next to Walker in the photograph. His arm was around her shoulder, pulling her in close.
That's Katrina Reed.
Walker's brief, Lawrence, leaned over and peered down at the photo. His eyes flitted to Walker, then back again. He hadn't come into the interview room particularly confident, but now he looked positively crestfallen.
So what happened there then, Eddie? Slip your mind, did it? Because you look pretty close in that photo.
He turned the picture around so it was facing him on the desk.
You look better without the beard, if you don't mind me saying. How long ago was this taken? 10 years?
Walker ground his teeth together, as if chewing over his answer.
8.
8? Right. So, Jesus.
Boss?
8 years. That was 8 years ago.
He glowered at Walker, speaking more quickly as things slotted into place.
DNA. You were looking up DNA.
So?
You think he's yours, don't you? Connor, you think you're his dad.
What? No. No, nothing like that.
That's it, isn't it? You think he's your son. Is that why you took him, Eddie? Is that why you grabbed him?
I didn't. It wasn't me. You've got it all wrong.
Have I? Then explain it to me, Eddie. Because right now, the story I've got up here, it all makes sense. It's no pleasant, but it makes sense. You think he's your son, so you took him and you tried to throw us off with the teddy bear in the envelope.
What fucking teddy bear? I don't know what you're on about!
And then, like a switch had been flicked, something changed. His breathing and movements, which had both been growing wilder, became slower, more controlled. He clasped his hands on the tabletop in front of him, a sort of resigned tranquility falling over him.
I want a lawyer.
You've got one.
A proper one, not this useless prick.
Lawrence looked briefly put out, but didn't voice any objections. If anything, he looked relieved.
Stop wasting time, Eddie. Where's the boy? Where's Connor?
Walker leaned forward.
I don't know. I mean it. I've got no idea. Which means that someone's still got him. He's out there now, somewhere, and you ain't doing nothing about it. You ain't even trying.
He sat back.
Now, I ain't saying anything else until I get a proper lawyer.
He glanced briefly in Lawrence's direction.
No offence.
None taken,
said Lawrence. He already had his briefcase on the table and was shoving his notepad and pen inside. Logan stood, his face a storm cloud of contempt.
D.S. Macquarie, put Mr. Walker in a cell.
He shot her a sideways look.
We do have cells in this place, right?
We do.
Good, right. Pick the worst one and chuck him in it. We'll continue this after I've spoken to Mrs. Reed.
He picked up the photo from the table and tucked it back into the folder.
Maybe she'll have something more to tell us.
Katrina Reed looked drawn and tired, all her previous nervous energy having long since burned itself out. There was a greyness about her, a flatness to her hair, a lack of flesh tones to her skin. Logan had seen it before. He'd watched grief and fear sepia-tone too many other parents just like her. Katrina looked up as Logan and Caitlin entered the interview room. Her face was in turmoil, wrestling with itself. Part resigned acceptance, part refusal to believe what her head was telling her.
"You found him, didn't you?"
she blurted, tripping, stumbling and almost choking on the words.
"You found him!"
Logan closed the door.
"Who?"
Katrina visibly flinched.
"What do you mean, who? Connor, you found him. He's dead, isn't he? You found him and he's dead."
"No, it's nothing like that. To the best of our knowledge, Mrs. Reed, Connor is still alive and unharmed. We have nothing to suggest otherwise, and getting him home safely is still the focus of our investigation."
He's alive?"
"We believe so, yes."
Katrina broke. That was the only way to describe it. Whatever last vestiges of resolve had been holding her together collapsed, and she buried her face in her hands, sobbing with what most people would assume was relief. And it was relief. Partly. Logan had never had to go through what Katrina was going through, but he'd seen it often enough, and had been involved in some frank and forthright discussions with other parents at similar moments. Relief was a big chunk of it. The majority of it, probably. And yet, as much of a relief as it was to be told their son or daughter was still alive, it only fueled the little nagging voice that told them that their child might well be suffering somewhere right now, and reminded them there was nothing they could do to stop it. At this very moment, Katrina was probably picturing unspeakable tortures being inflicted upon her son. She'd be watching him cry, hearing him calling out for her, hopelessly, desperately. "Sure, he's alive," the voice would be telling her. "But at what cost, Katrina? At what cost?"
"Caitlin, go get Mrs. Reed a cup of tea, would you? I'll have one too, if you don't mind."
D.S. McQuarrie glanced sympathetically at Katrina Reed, then nodded.
"Of course, will do."
Logan's stomach growled like a hungry animal. This did not go unnoticed.
"And I'll bring the biscuits, sir."
Once Caitlin had left, Logan sat across the table from Katrina Reed. He'd had the forethought to bring a box of tissues in with him, and she gratefully plucked a few from the opening on top to wipe her eyes and blow her nose. He set the box and the folder containing the photographs down on the table, the tissues much closer to her than to him.
"Thank you,"
Katrina said, her voice taking on a flat, expressionless tone. Logan had seen this before too. The battening down of the hatches, hammering any and all emotion into submission before it could bubble over and become unmanageable.
"You're welcome. How are you holding up?"
It was a stupid question, and one he already knew the answer to. It was written all over her face. Katrina sniffed.
"About what you'd think."
"And how's your husband doing?"
"He still thinks it's his fault,"
Katrina said. She looked away.
"I'm trying not to."
"It isn't. You can't watch your kids 24/7, as much as we'd all like to. The only person to blame for this is the person who took Connor. Your husband shouldn't hold himself responsible, and neither should you."
Katrina nodded, but it was disinterested, like she was humouring him.
"I'll try,"
she said. Then her head twitched a little, like something had just flicked her.
"Oh, I almost forgot to say, the teddy, the one that was delivered."
"What about it?"
"We checked. It isn't Connor's."
Logan's chair creaked beneath him as he shifted his weight.
"It isn't?"
"He has one a bit like it, but we found that in his..."
Her chest tightened as it all hit home again.
"It was in his bed."
Katrina cleared her throat a few times, trying to free it up.
"But the one that was delivered, it's not his."
"Right, okay,"
Logan muttered, his mind racing as it tried to figure out what, if anything, this new piece of information meant. He filed it away to come back to later.
Thanks for that. Really useful.
The door opened behind him, and Caitlin entered carrying a tray of mugs, a scattering of sugar sachets, and a little carton with a dribble of milk in the bottom.
Here we go,
she said, setting the tray down. Logan nudged the folder aside to make room, and Caitlin began distributing the mugs. They were all colourful and mismatched. Logan's had the Maltesers logo emblazoned across the side, and had originally probably come with an Easter egg inside. Katrina Reed wrapped both hands round her mug as if warming them. She stared into the dark depths and breathed in the steam.
Thank you.
No bother at all,
Caitlin said, relocating the milk, sugar, and a plate of biscuits from the tray to the table. She placed the tray on the floor, propped up against the table leg, then moved to take a seat beside Logan. He motioned with his eyes for her to sit next to Katrina instead. It was an interview of sorts, yes, but the last thing the poor woman needed was to feel like they were ganging up on her. Logan's stomach grumbled. There were three biscuits on the plate, a digestive, a hobnob, and a Tunnock's caramel wafer. He knew which one he had his sights on, but a nagging sense of decency made him wait.
Biscuit?
Dias Macquarie asked Katrina, indicating the plate. Katrina peered at the plate, blinking slowly as if seeing some sort of weird alien specimen for the first time.
Oh, no, thank you.
Logan had the caramel wafer in his hands before Katrina had finished talking.
Sorry,
he said, taking a chomp out of the end.
Starving.
DCI Logan's been working around the clock to bring Connor home.
Filling in while Logan munched his way through the chocolate biscuit.
We all have.
But you haven't found him.
Not yet, no. But we think we're close. We have some really strong leads.
Logan swallowed, spent a few seconds running his tongue across his teeth, then took a glug of tea. There was no sugar in it, but the lingering sweetness of the tonics did the job. Clearing his throat, Logan picked up the folder.
Mrs. Reed, you're probably wondering why I asked you to come in and see us. First up, let me assure you, you're not in any kind of trouble at the moment.
Trouble? What do you mean, trouble?
The tail end of the sentence hit home.
What do you mean, at the moment?
What can you tell us about Edward Walker?
Across the table, Katrina sat up straight, practically squaring her shoulders.
What? What do you...
The effort became too much. She sagged, and as she did, all the fight went out of her.
It wasn't him. I should have told you, but it wasn't him.
Logan opened the folder and placed the photograph between them. It had been taken in what looked like some kind of American diner, judging by the food on the table and what could be made out of the background. Katrina and Ed Walker were sitting on the same side of the table, close together, him with his arm around her. They were both smiling, although Walker looked a touch more relaxed about it than Katrina did. The photograph seemed to come almost as a relief to her now. Her face attempted something that wasn't quite a smile, but was headed in that general direction.
I never actually saw that picture before. It was in Inverness. We'd arranged to meet up.
This was taken around 8 years ago. Does that sound about right?
A jerk of Katrina's head confirmed it.
A few months before Connor was born, I'd been seeing him occasionally. We were just sort of getting to know each other, I suppose.
Katrina took another tissue and blew her nose.
I never told him. I was going to, but then Ed just disappeared. Prison. I eventually found out, but no, I never told him.
This is going to be a difficult question, Mrs. Reed, but it's important you answer truthfully.
He watched for something in her eyes that told him she understood, and continued once he'd seen it.
Is Ed Walker Connor's father?
Katrina's eyes widened. Her voice, when she found it, was incredulous with disgust.
What?
No, of course not. Is that what you think? That I'd... No, no.
Could he believe he's Connor's father?
No, of course he couldn't.
So, and again, apologies for the bluntness of the question, Mrs. Reed. You're saying you've never slept with him?
Slept with him? What are you talking about? Of course I didn't sleep with him.
Katrina's voice was becoming higher, her emotions betraying her and making a mockery of her attempts to rein them in.
He's not Connor's father. Of course he isn't Connor's father. He's mine.
This is A Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller. Written by J.D. Kirk and produced by Bea Heer.